Hare Krishna. Thank you everyone for coming today. This seat is very hot. Very hot. So you have to help me. And Niskinchana Prabhu, is he here? No. Niskinchana Prabhu kindly invited me to speak something about Srila Prabhupada because we're just a few days away from celebrating the occasion of the 40th year of his departure. It would be the 40th year of Prabhupada's disappearance from our vision. And so Niskinchana thought, well, you've been around a long time. Would you like to speak? And of course, as is ever the case, I said, no, I would not. But there must be something about his eyes and about the fact that he said something about, you've been around for as long as I've been here, and you've been around like a piece of the furniture, so there must be something that you would like to share with us. And I tried playing the old, I'm shy, I'm nervous, I don't have anything to say stuff. And of course, he continued to look at me with those eyes until I said, well, I guess there's no reason why I should say no, is there really? He said no. So by default, I'm sitting in this hot seat. So please bear with me, everyone. I thought, well, what is it that I can give to an audience? Other than the fact that I'm a miracle, maybe there's nothing else I can give. I'm a living miracle because I still wonder myself on a daily basis. There's some moments of each day that I ask myself, how did I get here? And I sometimes feel it's as though despite myself, I still continue to come almost every day, for probably just for the prasadam. But usually if I come and I think, well, I get something to eat, then invariably I start to meet other devotees. And this is called association. One of the many words that didn't exist in my vocabulary before Srila Prabhupada came into my life, association with devotees. Prabhupada emphasized, this is one of the major things that in my recollection, Srila Prabhupada emphasized as a means for all of us to cement our relationship with Krishna. As a means for us to stop thinking about ourselves as the be-all and end-all. To live with each other and to share with each other, to read with each other, to talk about Krishna with each other, to go on Sankirtan with each other, to distribute books with each other, to take prasadam with each other. Because the Kali Yuga tendency, of course, is that we want to isolate and I become the most important person. And I'm the one that knows everything. I'm the one that knows more than you. And I'm the one, as in my case, I can remember, I'm the one that's always surrounded by idiots. That was a hard one for me to take, but this is the tendency. So somehow or other, I am part of Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON family. And so earlier on I was thinking, well, if I'm going to be sitting on this seat, opening my mouth, what kind of things will I be able to say to you which aren't coming from up here, but which are coming from here and which you might be able to take away feeling inspired? Well, in and of myself, I have nothing to say, but I do have some recollections of being in the association of a pure devotee of Krishna. I'm part of a reading group, two reading groups, in fact. In fact, this is Wednesday's, so today it's the reading group upstairs. Jayadev Prabhu is over there, he's one of her group, so he can attest to how sweet it is for ordinary folk, ordinary people, to come into a room and sit together and open the books of his divine grace and spend, in this case, 2.25 hours together without arguing with each other, without throwing things at each other, but bathing in the sweetness of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, even though we might not be philosophers. Getting the sweetness. And in that time, understanding that this one person, Srila Prabhupada, came over here to the Western countries in 1965 with a treasure house, an unlimited treasure house of nectar, put it down, opened the lid, and asked us all to come and feed freely from what was within. That treasure of nectar. So last night, at my other reading group in my house, Srila Prabhupada was talking about a pure devotee, in this case Vidura. And he explained that a pure devotee is someone who is unaffected, completely unaffected by the lure of the material energy. Unlike the rest of us, who 24 hours a day are struggling and fighting with the attractions of the senses, of the mind, trying to find something else to do, something else to enjoy. In my case, before I really surrender. I was looking at a picture. I came across a picture which I might share later on. It was in 1971 at Rath Yatra. And I think it was my son that somehow discovered it on the internet, and he gave me it as a present a couple of years ago, and I'd forgotten all about it. I was rummaging through some stuff. What will I bring? Show and tell, you know. And there's a picture of me singing without any neck beads. I was so young. In fact, at that time, I would have just turned 20. No neck beads. And then I thought, what are you doing with no neck beads on? Because I'm here. And then I remembered that in those days before we were initiated, we didn't wear neck beads. I just remembered that. I thought, what? You look, everything, you've got the pot, you've got the dhoti. Everything was quite ragged. It was really ragged. The bead bag was ragged. And then I want to try and stay focused. So, let me just begin by sharing some of the moments that I shared with Srila Prabhupada. And I don't mean the intimate moments such as the Shamsundar moments and the Hari Sori moments and the Guru Das moments, who walked with Srila Prabhupada for months and for years in his personal association. I was fortunate. I am blessed that somehow or other I shared some moments in the close vicinity of Srila Prabhupada, one of which was in this room here while he sat in his Vyasasan, one of which was watching him install Radha Gokulananda. One of which was him being presented with this beautiful, full life-size image of himself. He was presented that on the day after he installed Radha Gokulananda, which that was the 21st or the 22nd of August, 1973. The day after that, it was, of course, a Vyasa Puja, and this was an offering from the artist Gopal, who I'm told has passed away just a few days ago in Hawaii. Saradia, the artist of this beautiful Panchatattva here, and also this Sadabuj over there, is another great artist who also has left our association within the last 10 days or so. So, and I'm getting on a bit, and I'm asking myself, Kishore, it's getting time. Prabhupada's been dangling the carrot in front of you for the last God knows how many years now. So, and all these friends, we've lost Bajahari, we've lost Mohan, we've lost Kalangana. You know, Sri Kama lost her mum this year. I lost my brother Tom this year. That's five I can think of closely. It's happening. This birth, old age, disease, and death phenomenon that Srila Prabhupada came to the West and opened the treasure house of knowledge and gave us, this is fundamental to us. The birth, old age, disease, and death. And primarily, what was Prabhupada's message? My dear friends, you are not that body. That stopped me in my tracks. And I was still a little teenager running around. I thought life meant party. I think a lot of teenagers also feel the same way, so I'm not the only one. But I had no... So when I say it's like a miracle that I'm somehow or other... It's not a miracle that possibly I became interested in a mystic movement like Hare Krishna or a person like Srila Prabhupada. Most of the people I lived with at the time were all on some pseudo-mystical search or some kind of path. So there was never far away from books about Buddhism and Zen and the I Ching and Bhagavad Gita. I even had my penguin paperback Bhagavad Gita that I would read every day avidly. I couldn't understand a word of it, really. But there was a vibration that came out of it that had some that was like heartwarming. Somehow or other, I trailed in. When I joined the temple, I was only 20 years of age. This is in Berry Place. I'd hitchhiked down from Huddersfield in Yorkshire, where I was living at the time, and I knocked at the door because I'd made my decision that I want to apply myself to this unknown, mystical, colorful, musical phenomenon called Hare Krishna. What attracted me about it most of all were the devotees, and even more so, the leader of those devotees, this Prabhupada, who by that time I had not met yet. So I knocked on the door. The door flew open, and who should I meet? Tribhuvanath. With a mardanga around his neck, grinning from ear to ear. And I was very emotional because I'd made my choice to change my life and to commit myself for the first time in my life to commit to something. And I'd come all the way down. I'd hitchhiked the lift. He'd drop me off at the end of the road. Knocked on the door, it swings open, and there's Tribhuvanath. And I'm crying. I said, I've come home. He said, really? Well, let's go on Samkirtan, he says. We're going on Samkirtan. So that was the first thing. Off I was swept off my feet down to Oxford Street, where I more or less lived for the next 6 months. Up and down Oxford Street, up and so on. Let me not digress too much about myself. Let me go back and talk about the moments I shared with Srila Prabhupada, starting with Prabhupada had just finished speaking. It was either after the installation of the deities or it was the day after on his Janmashtami. He'd spoken, and it was time for questions. And I was sitting over there, and one of the devotees sitting next to me said, Prabhupada, is it possible for a pure devotee to ever forget Krishna? Wow, I thought, what's Prabhupada going to say there? He said, Prabhupada, is it possible for a pure devotee to ever forget Krishna? And Prabhupada just looked straight at Radha Gokulananda, and he looked down at the devotee next to me and he said, every day I pray to Krishna, please don't let me fall down. So I've never forgotten that, even to this day. I share that one. That's something I share. What is the nature of a self-realized soul? As a young brahmachari, wet behind the ears, I realized that no one is safe from the allure of the material energy. So in order to remain safe from Maya, the sensible person is actively engaged in relating with Krishna through prayer. He's begging Krishna, please, I'm not good enough on my own. I need your shelter. Please give it to me. Even a self-realized soul, even a pure devotee of Krishna, prays to Krishna, please don't let me fall down. And as a young man, I even, Prabhupada's not just saying this to impress. He's not saying this, there's nothing. He means it. So if I want to stay Krishna conscious, I have to remember to pray to Krishna for his protection. Even the pure devotee prays to Krishna, please don't let me fall down. So that was one thing. There was another. What I'm trying to say is that my recollections of Prabhupada came in different ways. Sometimes it was the things that he said. Sometimes it was how he said those things, the inflection of his voice, the compassion that permeated the words that he said, and even sometimes even the spaces between the words that he spoke were significant. So Prabhupada for me was always laden with mercy, laden with compassion, and laden with knowledge. I could feel this heaviness. You know, it's said that the guru is heavy. So when I listened to Prabhupada, I felt his heaviness. Not harshness, heavy, heavy with compassion and knowledge and mercy. I hadn't met anyone like this before. There was a time in Berry Place when he'd just finished speaking again. Berry Place was a very small temple room, and when it was packed out, as it was this day, the condensation tended to drip from the ceiling. It was like that. It was being squeezed into a box. Prabhupada had just finished speaking, and a lady stood up afterwards. Time for, he said, question, are there any question? And there was a lady who we'd gotten to know. She came quite a lot to do service. But she always was very challenging as well. She's an Indian lady. And this lady stood up immediately. Any questions? And she stood up. Yes, she said, Swami, can you see God? Like challenging. Swami, can you see God? Prabhupada, without a beat, without missing a breath, said, yes, you cannot. And the silence was palpable, just like it is. Prabhupada used the silence as well. The room was packed. I was sitting in the corner, and all I could see was Prabhupada looking at this lady and this lady looking at Prabhupada. And there was nothing else there. Prabhupada looks like this. Krishna is everywhere. Why you cannot see? Silence. And what I'm seeing is that Prabhupada's turned it right around. He's turned it completely around. There's a challenge. And Prabhupada said, yes, you cannot. Krishna is everywhere. Why you cannot see? The silence. And it goes on and on, the silence. So Prabhupada says very quietly, do you want to see? And the lady, even then, she doesn't speak. She looked at her feet. She looks down and shakes her head like this. And Prabhupada then goes, therefore you cannot see. Like this. And I can still remember, I can almost see the electricity coming from Prabhupada's finger. So Prabhupada didn't even have to explain anything. That's what I was seeing. He didn't have to preach or explain or philosophize. And I could see this lady realizing she had her answer. And she sat down slowly. I don't recollect there being any more of an exchange. Maybe there was. Maybe Prabhupada did go on to make any. I don't remember. I just remember what I remember, and I'll never forget it. I cannot forget how Prabhupada responded to her challenge, her question, but it was a challenge. I learned in that moment that Prabhupada was absolutely fearless, and there was nothing. There was a challenge. Unexpected challenge. There was another challenge in Glasgow. Somehow or other, we managed to bring the pure devotee to Scotland. I had left Glasgow when I just turned 17. Now, in those days, in the late 50s, early 60s, Glasgow was a different place than it is now. It's more civilized now. It's a great place to. I love visiting Glasgow now. It's great. Then it was different. And when I was a child, I didn't like it. It was too violent. And I wanted to go away, and I did. I left Glasgow. So the opportunity to do something to promote the advent of Srila Prabhupada to Glasgow was just wonderful. It was a great opportunity. And eventually, there are some stories I could tell about the Prabhupada's Scottish visit. But this one in particular, I can share with you. And that was two from that Glasgow program. One of them, we're talking about challenges. Prabhupada had just delivered his lecture. And even then I can remember, I thought, no, Srila Prabhupada, these poor people from Glasgow, because I just remembered Glasgow being rough and violent. It had its reputation, and still does to a point. There were gangs roaming the place. There were a lot of murders. I had a friend, a school friend of mine. He was killed. That was one of that was the thing that pushed me over the edge to leave Glasgow. One of my school friends was stabbed. He was only 16 and so forth. So the idea of Srila Prabhupada coming to this place was something very special. Prabhupada had just completed his lecture in the Woodside Hall in Maryhill, one of the roughest parts of Glasgow as well. One of the real rough parts of Glasgow, Maryhill. The reason we booked that hall was because it had a university. So we thought the students will come. And also, it was a big Asian community. Muslims, Hindus were in that particular area. So we thought, well, we'll get people from that community and we'll get students. So we booked it in Maryhill, which was one of the roughest parts of the whole place. However, Prabhupada had finished his lecture, and I was hoping that it would be a nice, mystical, peaceful lecture from the guru, from the you know, because in those days, in there, that would be 1972. So there were lots of spiritual groups blossoming. It was blossoming, you know. Still, we're in the hippie age era kind of thing. Lots of movements going on. The Guru Maharaj Ji, Divine Light Mission, and TM groups, and lots of groups were So I thought, well, they're going to get some real sweetness and light lecture from a devotee of Krishna. From beginning to end, it was the harshest lecture I'd ever heard Prabhupada giving. Arjuna and Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And it was, Prabhupada didn't hold back either about the warfare, the carnage that was going on, and ultimately the message that God was giving to his devotee. That if I tell you to kill your own family and your own teachers, then you should do as I say, and that's your duty, because you're a warrior. The whole lecture was about fighting, warfare, and surrendering to Krishna, like that through killing and warfare. I thought, oh no, you know, this is what I left this place for, you know. But now I was able to see it in a different light, but I was wondering how the audience would take to a lecture like this. But after Prabhupada finished, everyone got up and applauded and cheered. They loved it. I thought, God, I felt so much relief. They loved Prabhupada's talk on the battle of Kurukshetra, the war, the carnage, the fighting, the violence, you know. And that is Krishna consciousness, if it's used in the proper context. Of course, that I understood is the context. So, okay, any question? Are there any questions? And then immediately this long-haired, this student-looking guy came. He started raving away at the back of the hall. I'm God. You're God. We're all God. Why do we have to surrender to God? We're all God. And Prabhupada looked at one of his disciples, and he said, I cannot hear. Ask him to come. Ask him to come. So he was invited to come down. Prabhupada said he couldn't hear. He was just like this, drunk or stoned or whatever, I don't know, but you know, he was really... So he came all the way down, and as he came down the middle, the aisle in the middle, and everyone's looking at this, and he never stopped raving away. I don't need to surrender. We're all God. So he came down and stood before Prabhupada. Prabhupada's up on the stage, up in his Vyasasana. He's looking down at this guy. He's screaming. Then he finishes. He finishes whatever he's done. So when he finishes, Prabhupada said, so, you're finished now? You're finished speaking? And he goes, yeah. So I can remember wondering how Prabhupada going to deal with this, you know. And again, I saw Srila Prabhupada's compassion at work, somehow or other. What I can remember Prabhupada saying, and I still have a copy of the tape as well, he said, so you know what is the meaning of God? He said. He said, I think so. He said, God means controller. You are controller? And the guy, he's wondering what to say. So he goes, sometimes. And Prabhupada said, yes, sometimes. In the office, you are controller. In the home, you are controlled. And then Prabhupada began to explain the nature of the controller. He said, everyone is controlled to a certain extent. But when you come across that person who is not controlled in any way by anyone, but who is always in control, that is God. Prabhupada explained very nicely to this guy how he couldn't be God. And then he said, so, you are not God. You are dog. I thought, what a statement. But previous to that statement, Prabhupada had kindly clarified things for him. So I could see that Prabhupada could then say, you are dog. Because what happened then was that he just turned around and walked slowly all the way back up the aisle, and everyone was just applauding, clapping Srila Prabhupada. So I could see that he could understand. He's learned a lesson. There was nothing else he could say. But it's how Prabhupada dealt with this person. I wanted to get down off the stage and clobber him or something. I just wanted to shut this, you know, this, which is, you know, how I can still feel. But that's... There was another instance of Prabhupada's compassion too that happened shortly afterwards. There were maybe one or two other questions and answers, and then Prabhupada said, so dance, kirtan, he said, kirtan. So a big kirtan took place. It started on stage. And then the devotees were dancing, and the doors were opened of the hall. They opened all the doors to let if there was anyone else that wanted to come in. And in that part of Glasgow, there were loads of street kids, scruffy street kids. And they were scruffy. They lived around on the street, basically. You know, they were poor. They were, you know, like that. They were poor. So they all started streaming in from the street. These guys in their they're all rags and filthy clothes. And some of them thought, hey, there's some action here. Let's have some. And some of them came running up on the stage. And they were dancing around like this and going, Hare Krishna, this and that. Some of them were just making some fun, some like this, you know, trying to, you know. They were clowning around, some of them. So some of them devoted, including myself, were getting a little bit uptight, you know, what to do, what to do. You know, they're being offensive, you know, being offensive, this and that. And so one of the devotees asked Prabhupada, should we remove them? And I was standing right there next to them. And what Prabhupada said was, he said, no, let them dance. They are devotees. So what I felt then was that here's this devotee of Krishna. Wherever he looks, he sees a devotee. And I felt that he meant it. Again, like the words he said here, every day I pray to Krishna, please, don't let me fall down. When he was speaking those words, I felt in my heart that he meant it. And when Prabhupada sat on that stage in Glasgow and all these raggedy kids were going, Hare Krishna, this and that, Prabhupada said, no, let them dance. They are devotees. Like that. And so they all... Those are the little things I remember. Don't ask me to remember the lecture that he gave or the points that he made. You know, for me, my part in Krishna consciousness is like trying to catch rain with a sieve, you know. Is it most of it I lose, but I've kept some of it, you know. There was one time, I remember, I think I was sat here last year and the time disappeared really fast. I'm kind of looking, all right, so we'll come back to Vedanta Manor. I was sitting upstairs. I'm telling these stories. My wife's heard them a million times, I think, you know, but I'll keep, because some of you haven't heard these stories. And maybe those who might be hearing it for the first time, it may impact you for the rest of your life. And that's what I would like to think it will do. You know, I have been impacted by Srila Prabhupada for the rest of my life. Now, how Krishna conscious I choose to become is in my hands. That's the secret. That how Krishna conscious I choose to become with this lifetime, having been blessed by Srila Prabhupada, is entirely in my hands, and it's entirely in your hands, all of you, as to how far down the line you take this Krishna consciousness that you've been given. It's magical. Upstairs in Prabhupada's darshan room, it was packed, and Prabhupada had been addressing an audience of visitors and devotees. Whoever they all were, it was packed out. At the time, I had a little stepson. His name was Premananda, and he was about 5 or 6 years of age. Now, I was standing behind Srila Prabhupada. Probably the main reason being there was nowhere else for me to stand or sit. It was just packed out, and I was just... So I wasn't far from Prabhupada, just behind him, against the wall upstairs, near the window. And the door opened, and... Little Premananda's head popped round the door like this, and his mother had dressed him up like a sannyasi. He was the full regalia, the sannyasi, dhoti, and he had a little danda as well. Little 5, 6-year-old kid, you know, and so he looked round with his danda like this, you know, and Prabhupada said, ah, Maharaj! He said, come! He stopped his lecture, he stopped talking. And so Premananda started climbing over everyone and coming towards Prabhupada, finding his way around people to get to the, you know, and sat down in front of Prabhupada's desk, you know, this table, little table up there, you know. And that was Premananda. So, you know, Prabhupada was talking away, so he's a sannyasi, Jai Maharaj, and where have you been, and what have you been doing, and how are you? And so then he gave a plate, there was a plate of some sweets or cookies, and so Premananda started scoffing. And Prabhupada resumed talking to his audience, with Premananda sitting there scoffing, you know, scoffing at the sweets. And I thought, oh. And there was a part two to the story, you see, because the next day, little Premananda was still running around down here, this time in the prasadam room, and he was still with his danda, and the sannyasi was playing with his mates, with his little friends. And I was in the room as well, thinking, is this right? You know, it doesn't look... But you know, they're just kids, and kids play. So he was, you know, fighting with his danda and all that, you know. And then I looked over to the corner of the room, to the other entrance, and there was Prabhupada, surrounded by his disciples. He'd just come back from his morning walk, and Prabhupada was watching this thing going on. Oh God, I thought, wow. And then Prabhupada turned to the devotee next to him and he said, "Who is the father?" Oh, so I said, all right then. And Prabhupada was very grave this time. Last night, he was laughing and joking and think, Maharaj, come, and talking to him, the sannyasi. This time, Prabhupada was grave, heavy with gravity. So I went to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I am the father. And Prabhupada looked at me and he said, he shouldn't dress like this again. Sannyas is very serious business. And then he walked off with the disciples like that. That was all he had to say. No more of this. Sannyas is very serious business. And when Prabhupada said the word serious, you felt what serious means. Serious. So I think we may have room for maybe one more. Time's getting on. Would anyone like to hear any other little? Okay, because there's little. Prabhupada gave me my name, Kishore, in 1971. I'd only been living in the temple for 6 weeks. Sometimes, even to this day, I still feel maybe it was a bit premature. I think to myself, maybe if I'd thought longer and waited longer, now I might have been more this or more that. Maybe I'd be writing books, or, you know, opening temples, or with loads of disciples, or, you know, doing all that. But I am what I am, and that's what I am today. And I'm happy that I've been blessed by Srila Prabhupada with these moments. After only 6 weeks, I was encouraged by one of my godbrothers, Kulashekar. He liked me. He was a good friend to me. And he encouraged me to take. He said, now's the time. Prabhupada's giving initiations, Kishore. You should go for it. You might not get another chance. You might not get another chance like this. He's giving initiation. I'll put in a good word for you. Go for it. Go for it. And I'm thinking, I don't know. I'm only a little baby. I don't know anything. You know, go for it. Go for it. Anyway, somehow or other, I thought, well, I'll go for it. So there I was, after 6 weeks, sitting in front of Srila Prabhupada, desperate with nerves, sweating and trembling, thinking, how am I going to remember the four regulative principles? Because he's going to ask me, what are the four regulative principles? And I'm going to forget. So somehow or other, I managed to remember the four regulative principles. Probably if you ask me now, I'd forget, right now. So it's nothing new. So I got the four regulative principles. And then, so then Prabhupada says, and so your name is Kishore Das. Oh, thank you, Prabhupada. Because I was hoping for a short name, something that's quite easy to remember. I was hoping, it's not a big long name. So he said, Kishore. You know what is the meaning of Kishore? He said. I said, no, Prabhupada. He said, Kishore means adolescent Krishna. when he used to woo the gopis. Ah. Then he said, but you are not Kishore. You are Kishore Das. Thank you, Prabhupada. I think the lady that was initiated just before me, her name was Kishori. So there was Kishori, and then came Kishore. So that was probably tied into, you are not Kishore. You are Kishore Das. In Edinburgh, Prabhupada had finished giving a... after he arrived in the Edinburgh Temple, which we'd put together in a matter of months with the help of other devotees, myself and Tribhuvanath and Sambhanath, we somehow or other spent some time opening a temple in Edinburgh in 1971-72. And then devotees came from the manor and all over the country. Some Mohan, I think, came from Manchester. And devotees were coming from all over the place to help decorate and do the plumbing, the electrics, put the place together for Prabhupada's arrival. Prabhupada had just finished speaking. And just across the road, there was the ashram of another group called the Divine Light Mission. The Guru Maharaj Ji was his name, a young kid who apparently was an incarnation of God at the time. And he had a lot of other people believed that, yes, this young overweight boy is God, and so on and so forth. And it was a big thing. So their ashram was just across the road, and they had a big image of the Guru Maharaj Ji in the window as well. And we'd chant japa, looking out the window going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, like this, Hare Krishna. You know, there was competition over there, kind of thing. But when Prabhupada came to Edinburgh, a lot of their followers came over to hear him speak. And I was impressed when they came through the door to hear Prabhupada speak. Most of them were carrying things, like some fruit or some pints of milk, some offerings. I thought, well, So Prabhupada finished his address, and at the end he said, so that is our philosophy. Are there any questions? And one of the followers, the Guru Maharishi, says, why must God be philosophy? Was his question. Why must God be philosophy? Prabhupada looked at him and said, Krishna is God, and God is great. Philosophy means to know how God is great. And that was it, very simple. Again, if Prabhupada elaborated on that, I don't have any recollection. My recollection was how he responded to that challenge. Why must God be philosophy? I'm thinking, how is Prabhupada going to reply to that? And the answer is, very simple. Krishna is God, and God is great. Philosophy means to know how God is great. And he just left it at that. I sometimes think that Prabhupada then said, do you want me to tell you fairy stories? But you couldn't quote me on that. I don't think he really said that. But I do remember what he did say. And that was significant for me, that if I want to understand Krishna, then there's the philosophy. That's why it's there. 70 volumes of books, if you want. I think we've gone over the time now, so can I ask you if anyone has any questions? Would anyone of you like to ask anything that I can... Well, all I can say to you is that it's been my great pleasure being able to share this with an audience who are equally keen to hear about some of the glories of the pure devotee that we've all come to hopefully dedicate the rest of our lives to. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you. Hare Krishna.